Hey, what up, y'all? It's your girl, Vivica Fox, and welcome to my podcast, Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. Darlings, don't forget to subscribe, review, download, and listen now. All right, y'all, I got a good guest for y'all today. I got to know my next guest while rediscovering myself on stage playing Vivian Wolf. He co-starred as a very dreamy and charming Julian Heaven in the play Whatever She Wants. Now, he is tearing up the screen as star of ABC series Station 19, playing Captain Robert Sullivan. He was also named one of 50 most beautiful people in the world by People Magazine in 2002. He is perhaps best known as one of the 7 regular cast members from the Showtime drama hit Soul Food, which aired from 2000 to 2004. He also appeared in the 2002 film Brown Sugar and starred in the sitcom Second Time Around with his Soul Food co-star, Nicole Ari Parker, whom he married in 2005. I am so excited to welcome my dear friend and the very handsome Mr. Boris Kojo. Hey, Boris.
Hey, babe. How you doing?
I almost ran out of breath doing your intro, brother.
Wow. I need to tape this and then play it before I enter any room. Perfect introduction. Just need my head swell up.
Okay, can you fit through the room now? Because you know you got some receipts, brother. You do. How's life been treating you during COVID and the family? How's everybody doing?
You know, I always try to see the silver lining. And obviously, you know, there's so many people suffering through this right now. We're dealing with the health pandemic, we're dealing with the economic pandemic, we're dealing with the social justice and systemic racism pandemic. And It's all sort of exploded. And I even though we're suffering right now, I think that this is a moment that's pivotal in our history, because I believe that we can be a part of the solution. And, you know, this might bring us closer together if we do it right.
Wish everybody would cooperate.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
And wear a mask. Sanitize your hands and practice a little bit of social distancing and not deny that COVID is real.
Yep. See, every single other country has done it. So why is it so difficult to do it here?
You know, Americans, land of the free. I can do what I want to do. Don't be trying to tell me I got to wear a mask. You know, and then they come up with these stupid, oh, I have a medical condition.
It's so stupid.
It really is. So let's talk about you. Enough about the people that don't get it, because we do. Okay. All right. So I want to take people back, because I don't know if a lot of people know this about you, but you grew up in Germany.
Yep.
Tell us about that.
I grew up there. My mom's German. My father's from Ghana, Africa. And so I grew up in Germany. You know, had a brother, Patrick, and me and him, we were the only Black kids in the And that presented some challenges, you know, being bullied every day and dealing with that.
Really? There was bullying just because you guys were Black or mixed?
You surprised about that?
Well, I mean, to be very honest with you, I am, because the one thing that I felt about Europe was that I didn't know that there was such racism. But in Germany, I guess that would be a little bit different, you know?
Well, you know, I think racism is universal. It's just a different dynamic, I guess, in Germany, because we were a true minority. I mean, it's not like here where you have, you know, 30, 40 million Black people, where it's almost like two separate societies at home. We were the only Black kids in our entire town. So anybody who's different gets it. So we definitely got it every day, you know, walking to school and you know, it was tough. And we sort of found our refuge in sports. I played tennis competitively. My brother played basketball, and we both represented our country on a junior national teams, and then got scholarships to come here. And that's how we ended up in the States. I was on a tennis scholarship. He was on a
basketball. Now, I want to also let people know, how many different languages can you speak, Boris?
Well, I speak three. I speak, you know, German is my mother language. Also, das spreche ich den ganzen Tag.
I give it to a Boris.
And then I speak French and English and Spanish.
So oh, my gosh. Can you give him a little French real quick?
Bonjour Vivica, ça va bien? Je suis très heureuse d'être ici avec toi.
I love it. Now, what did you just say? I know one of them was, hey, Vivica, how you doing today, correct?
I said, I'm blessed to be here with you today. I said,
yes. Okay. And then the other language?
That would be English.
I
learned that when I came here. So, and you know, this is actually funny because when I came here, I couldn't speak English very well. So one of the things that I did in order to improve my English was to go to acting class, because I was told that when you're in acting class and you learn those breathing techniques and through repetition and stuff, you learn how to speak without an accent. So that's why I started going to acting class. I never really had the dream of becoming an actor, but I wanted to get rid of my crazy German accent. And that's why I ended up in acting class.
So I just find that amazing that it's like you speak so well now that when you first came to America, how many years ago was that when you first came to America?
I came 25 years ago. Wow.
25 years ago. How long did it take you, in your opinion, to lose the accent?
Well, I'm still struggling sometimes when I'm on set and it gets really late and I'm tired because I'm thinking in German. So while we're speaking right now, I'm thinking in German and I'm translating.
Wow.
So when you get tired or when you're really upset, like when the visceral you comes out, it comes out in your natural language, which is German for me. So I'm still struggling sometimes, but I would say I got comfortable towards the end of Soul Food. So season 5 of Soul Food, I started becoming more and more comfortable with speaking without being self-conscious about it. But the first couple of seasons, you know, Nicole helped me a lot. She would break down scripts for me. She would explain certain references in the script, whether they were about old American TV shows that I didn't know what they were, or sayings like go out on a limb. That kind of stuff makes no sense to me.
I get it.
But you know, the hardest part really, honestly, about sort of getting into character here in this country is the culture. Like the language is one thing, but to move and behave like an African American is very specific, right?
Yes, we agree.
We laugh in a very specific way. We move, we relate to each other in a very specific way. So for someone who is from a different culture like me, being very German and African, that was really the hardest part for me, to portray characters that look like they were from, you know, New York or DC or wherever. And to get that right that took a long time for me.
This is Jess Betancourt, the host of DNA ID, the only true crime podcast that exclusively covers cases solved using forensic genealogy. DNA ID goes behind the headlines to answer your questions about this remarkable new crime-solving tool, how it works, how cases are selected, why the cases were unsolved for so long, and how the justice system is addressing it. I include input from law enforcement to give you the inside scoop that we all crave with a straightforward, no-nonsense delivery. You can find DNA ID on any podcast platform. Episodes come out weekly on Mondays.
So now I want to rewind just a touch, because you told me that the main reason why you got to come to America from Germany was because you got a tennis scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
Now tell me about that. Did you play professionally? I mean,
yes,
you're very tall. You're tall. How tall are you?
I'm 6'4". And growing up, I played everything, because in Germany, you play, obviously you play soccer, which is the biggest sports in the world. So I played soccer. I played basketball, tennis. Mm-hmm. And then at about 14, 15, I had to pick and I picked tennis. And I was, you know, one of the top juniors in the country, and got a scholarship offer. And at the time I was playing semi-pro, and I had a back injury that set me back, where I pretty much figured out that with this condition that I had, I couldn't really play professional any longer.
Do you mind sharing that with us?
It was a back injury. I had stenosis, which is when your spinal canal is very narrow, so it keeps pinching your spinal your sciatic nerve, which is the nerve that goes all the way from the base of your spine to your skull.
Okay.
And you know, when people complain about sciatic pain, it's really, really excruciating, and I had it every day.
Wow. So it became too painful to play.
Yeah. So I came here and I took one of the scholarships, and went to VCU in Richmond, Virginia, which was a really great decision for me in retrospect, because I made amazing friends for life. And I played under a coach named Paul Costin, who was somebody who really took interest in me as a person and helped me develop, not just on the court, but off the court as well. I learned a lot from him. I learned a lot of lessons that helped me to this day, you know, that I apply in business and relationships. And so tennis, really, I owe everything to tennis, because without it, I wouldn't have come here.
Right. Now, do you ever have like, wow, I wish that instead of acting, I would have been a professional tennis player? Any regrets that, you know, the between the two?
You know, not regrets, because I believe everything happens for a reason. I think there's a plan in place that God has sort of figured out for you. And I've learned not to resist that. But yes, I mean, I'm still very much involved in the sport.
Good.
Serena is like my little sister, and I work out with her and you know, all my peers that played on a tour, and I'm still very close to. So I'm still close to the sport that I love and
yes.
life. But you know, I can't be mad. You know, I've been blessed to find my purpose in this industry as a family man, a father, and
a dog owner in the back.
That's right. Max, you know, he's a black German. That's how we do.
Max, like, hey, what's up? Yo, when you go, be walking me. Okay.
Don't forget me.
So now let's go from tennis to acting.
Yeah.
You know, for you to go from the scholarship, you moved to America. Mm-hmm. And now, how did acting fall in your lap?
I got a degree at VCU and a business degree, and I moved to New York. And I was discovered in New York on the street and by this modeling agent. And so I spent the next couple of years traveling the world and working as a model. I lived in Paris and London and in New York. And while I was modeling, like I mentioned earlier, somebody suggested I go to acting class to get rid of my accent, because I was really sounding really German. So I did that, you know. So whenever I was in New York, I went to acting class with Susan Batson, who's like a legend in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I studied and I practiced a lot. You know, when I was off, I would go home and 3 hours a day, I would say phrases and watch TV and mimic people saying certain things. And because,
like, you know, what shows did you watch? What shows?
I watched Up All Night. Oh, sorry. Out of Night. Of course.
That's all right. That's all right. Oh.
Yes. And I watched Oprah.
Yeah.
And I would pause the screen, and then I would say whatever you said or she said or whoever said, and I would mimic that, and I would try to say the same thing, because it's, you know, the every
repetition.
Language has a different melody.
Okay.
So the melody is really what gives away if you're a native speaker or not. So it's, and you can achieve that through repetition. So I did that for hours and hours and end until I felt comfortable. And that's how I improved the way I spoke.
What was your first big acting job?
My first big acting job was the Steve Harvey Show.
Really? What character did you play? Do you remember?
I played a character who was the water delivery guy. And Terry J. Vaughn was the
I love Terry.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then I got Love and Basketball after that, and then Soul Food. So Soul Food was really my first big time job, which was such a blessing on so many levels. Obviously, I met my wife, but I also used it as a training ground, you know, as an apprenticeship, to get my feet wet in the industry. And every day I went to set, even if I didn't work, because I wanted to learn from everybody who was working on the set. So I would spend the day with the DP, the director of photography, and I would spend the day with the producer. I would spend the day with the set designer, just to learn the business. And I spent 5 seasons on Soul Food, and it was the best learning experience for me that I could have ever wished for.
Wow. Now, how, you guys, that was four seasons, Soul Food, which was the spinoffs. You see how you and I are connected, Boris? I mean, in more ways than one. I had no idea that you were watching Out All Night and that's how you learned English.
That's
then,
right.
You do the spinoff of my movie, Soul Food, you know, for 4 years. Where did you guys film that at? Was it up in Toronto?
We shot in Toronto, yes. So it was 2000.
I did my television show, Missing, in Toronto as well, too.
There you go.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, we're like 6 degrees of separation, you know?
All the time,
Yeah. Now, Soul Food, what was that experience like for you working on Soul Food? I mean, of course, you met Nicole. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as an actor, you know, you just, I mean, you grew so much, right?
Oh, my God. It was such a blessing for me because in the beginning, I was so nervous and I was still so German and they would laugh when I say certain things in a table read. You know, I would say this, the couch, sit down, the couch is comfortable. I would say stuff like that all the time. So it was,
what would you say? Comfortable.
Comfortable.
Comfortable. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my
so,
gosh.
Yeah. So I would use every day to learn and Nicole would break down scripts for me and she would say words and teach me how to pronounce them. And mm-hmm. And I was lucky that they liked the chemistry between us and they gave me a serious regular job. So I spent all, you know, 5 seasons there. Which really prepared me for the rest, you know, the rest of my career. It was a perfect training ground for me. And it was such a blessing to work with, you know, so many Black people, behind the camera. And I sort of got spoiled because I thought this is
how it's going to be. Okay.
I didn't realize until years later that Soul Food was really a groundbreaking experience. And that without Soul Food, you know, the Shonda Rhimeses of the world and
exactly
wouldn't be in the position that they're in right now. So,
and that was produced by Tracy Edmonds, who we had did Soul Food. Yes, exactly. So
it was Tracy Edmonds, it was Felicia Henderson,
who
ran the show. Amara Akil was there and Salim Akil was on the show and a producer. So, you know what? Then there was Kenya, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Kenya was Felicia's assistant on Soul Food.
Wow. See there? Uh-huh. That's what we got to let people know. It's like everyone has to pay their dues and start somewhere. You know, here you went from the water cooler guy on the Steve Harvey show, you know, to the other bit parts here to now, you know, work with them like him. He started as the assistant and now he has Grown-ish, Black-ish. I mean, a franchise.
Yeah, with Netflix.
Yes. So, yeah,
Kenya Barris was just one of so many people who came through Soul Food. And I mean, every single actor in Hollywood came through Soul Food as well. I mean, from Alba to, I mean, everybody was on that show. So we really had a great moment in history there. That the foundation was laid, obviously, by your movie. And how, like you said, how everything is connected and how we have to, as a culture, as Black people, we have to use this as an example.
And tell our stories.
Yes, and collaborate and create synergies and work together to tell our stories and stop giving away our IP and stop giving away our power. We don't need anybody. Mm-hmm. We can do this. Together. And this was one of those examples, you know, now you have shows like, you know, Grey's Anatomy, you have Murder.
Which we're going to talk about in a minute because you've got a wonderful spinoff that we're going to get to. But I want to give you your kudos right now because, you know, from you being someone who could barely speak English when you came to America, you came here on a tennis scholarship, turned into an actor. Boris, you have had 3 NAACP award nominations for Outstanding Supporting Actor. You worked on Broadway in 2008 in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof opposite James Earl Jones. I mean, come on, you know, life is good. You know, this journey for you, it just don't get no better. What was it like working with James Earl Jones?
That was one of those moments. I get goosebumps just thinking about it. It's somebody who's such an icon, such a legend. Who transcends the industry, you know, a Darth Vader and Mufasa, and his voice is just instantly recognizable across the world. And he's just a sweetheart of a man who was so gracious to me, to embrace me and to teach me. And, you know, I met in his room in the dressing room after every performance, and he would sort of break down the performance and give me give me insight and pointers. And that was a time that I will always cherish, because I learned so much. And my kids were around. You know, Nicholas was literally, he could just walk, and he would sit on his lap and play, and you know, in the theater. So that was truly one of those moments that I will never forget, that I will cherish forever.
I love it. I love it. Now, okay, so you then went from working with James Earl Jones to Vivica A. Fox in Whatever She Wants.
That's right.
Which I'm going to tell y'all, that's right. We worked.
A legend, another legend, another icon in the gang.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kojo. I appreciate
that. That was funny, because I remember being in rehearsal with you, and we're doing a scene, and Sophie was there.
Yes.
Because she was always there, because, you know, I had to take care of her. She has spinal bifida, yes. So she always had to be close. And Sophie, I guess she was maybe two.
Yes.
And when we were doing the scene and we were embracing each other, she jumped on the stage and stood between us and said, yes. No.
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 She wasn't having it.
At all. She was like, y'all got way too much chemistry going on up here. And that is not my mother.
Yep. She was like, nope, not going to have it. Nope.
But then later she came to, like, really, I remember holding her all the time, and she warmed up. But at first it was like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, she was very protective of her daddy. But, you know, I'm just going to tell you guys, like, that play was the beginning of me rediscovering myself and going into a new chapter, because I was at a point in my career where it was like, everybody was so caught up in my love life and this, that they forgot I could act. Mm-hmm. So I was really grateful that I got to go back on the theater, hit the road. How long were we out on the road with that play, Boris? Do you remember? It was right?
It was in the summer, I think. It was like 3 months or something.
Oh, okay. Because then I went back and I did another play with Ryan McKnight. We were out there for like a year, but 3 months was long. And we were doing like 8 shows a week, right?
Yeah.
It was a grind.
It was intense.
It really was, yeah.
I had no idea. But you know what? I remember I was so grateful for that experience, because it prepared me for Broadway.
Yeah,
it really did. It really prepared me to be able to do Broadway after that. So, you know, I think, you know, every project, every movie, TV show, whatever you do, there's always a purpose.
Yes.
Every single project has a purpose on your journey. And I've learned to appreciate that for what it is. Right. Because sometimes people ask us, you know, why did you do this or that? Or what was the decision making? Sometimes you don't know until later why you did a certain thing.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? And you look back years later and you go like, oh, okay.
Exactly. So now let's move forward, because, you know, you went from TV to stage, and now you're back on TV again in season 4 of your hit series, which is the spinoff of Grey's Anatomy, correct?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, you star as Captain Robert Sullivan in Station 19. I don't think I got to tell you, Mr. Kojo, everybody love a fireman, okay?
I found out.
Oh, did you? In what ways did you find out, Captain Sullivan?
You know, we always get the best feedback from our people when we travel, when we go through the airports and stuff, and the ladies with the wand, they wand you down. They go, you know, you ain't right treating her like this. You know, you better be nice to that woman.
I can't believe you did her wrong like that. I
can't believe you did that, taking drugs. Come on now, you know better.
So tell us now, it just premiered this past Thursday, November 12th, and it's on at 8 p.m. every Thursday night on ABC, correct? Season 4. How did this fall into your lap, Boris?
You know, I just ended the show called Code Black, which was a great show on CBS, with Surgeon, and with Louis Guzman and Rob Lowe.
Ooh, what a beautiful cast that sounded like.
It was a great show, and it ended. And 2 days later, I got a call from Shondaland. They wanted to meet me for this spinoff that they were doing for Grey's Anatomy that had run a season already, and they were sort of retooling it. So I met with them, and you know, it was a character that I really felt was interesting. Mm-hmm. And then when I started working on the show, it's an amazing cast, really, from Jaina Lee Ortiz to Jason George.
I love Jason George. Yes. He's so awesome. Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
everybody on that show is incredible. And it's like a family. And also being a part of Shondaland was also a dream of mine, because I feel that Shonda has changed the way we watch TV.
Agreed. I tell you, this is what I love about what's happening for us right now, African-Americans as actors, that we have, you know, Shonda Rhimes, that we have directors from Regina King to Tasha Smith to Debbie Allen that, you know, really know how we get down as actors and don't try to force us into roles the way that they would see a Black person. Yep. It's like, it's so important for our stories to be told by us. You also working with Paris Barclay, who I started my career with back in the day. I love Paris. How is Paris?
He's incredible. I mean, we talk every day. He's on set.
Oh, please give him my love. Please tell him. Yeah, that's my dude. I love Boris. I mean, I love Paris and Boris too. So you guys are saving lives on the screen. But off screen, you're doing something that's really, really, it's called the Grey's Anatomy crossover event, correct?
Yeah, well, those episodes are great when we get to cross over with Grey's Anatomy. It happens a couple times a year when our stories converge. And it's fun for the fans to see these storylines cross over from one show to the other. And for us to work with our Grey's Anatomy family, it's always fun. But what I'm mostly proud of with Station 19 is that we don't shy away from current issues. We talk about COVID, we talk about social justice, systemic racism. You know, Shonda and Debbie Allen and Krista Vernov, our showrunner, have never shied away from really digging deep and creating this dialogue around things that are important right now.
Right.
You know, we represent true life heroes. These firefighters are the ones, you know, putting their life on the line for us right now through this pandemic.
Is that equipment? I know this is going to be a sidebar. Is that equipment as heavy as it looks?
It is.
Yes. Oh my gosh. It looks like you guys. It's like, and I'm just thinking about, you got to wear the hat. Then you got the boots. Yep. Then you got the thing. And then you got to carry the hose. You know, that's a lot of equipment.
Yep. And they put us through boot camp, make sure we're up to snuff for all the stuff that we have to do.
Really? How much training did you have to do?
Oh, we have every year we go and we have to do a boot camp and to make sure that we still know what to do, and because it's got to look authentic, right? It's got to be real.
Absolutely.
And we have real firefighters on the show who help us make sure it looks real. And
speaking of our first responders, you and your wife are doing something called Gym Wrap.
Well, you know, we got the Gym Wrap. That's Nicole created the Gym Wrap 8 years ago, which is the best headband on the market, which helps especially our sisters, keeps your hairstyle while you can still work out. And so when the pandemic hit, we pivoted and said, look, we can manufacture masks. So we started producing masks. They're washable, reusable, colorful for the whole family. And we gave away over $500,000 worth of masks to our first responders.
Yay! I love that.
Look, in these times, we got to just band together and figure out how to help each other. And like you said in the beginning, masks are important, you know, to protect our neighbors. And so we gave away a whole lot of masks all across the world.
500,000. I mean, that's a lot. And then also you guys are, you have a website where you're raising funds. You want to tell us about that?
Are you talking about the Help
Our Heroes? Absolutely.
That's what the mask initiative is. It's called Help Our Heroes. And so when you go to the gymwrap.com, you can either buy gym wraps or masks, and whatever you buy, it enables us to give away masks for free to people who really need them.
I love it. I love it. I love to hear that. You know, it's like, that's what we have to do. We got to figure out how to get our country back on track and work together so that we all can get through this together. So now I want to move on before I run out of time with you. I want to talk about family, because like I said, I've known you and your wife for a very long time. I remember seeing your wife getting on the plane with both of the babies and them looking up with them big old pretty eyes. I remember Sophie from when we did, you know, whatever she wants, and her coming like back up off my dad and then her warming up to me. You first worked with your wife, Nicole, in 2005. What was that like?
You know, I mean, we met working. So, you know, we've always worked together well, whether it was on Soul Food or it was on, we had a sitcom called Second Time Around. which we did together, or then we had a talk show.
I know, which I was a guest on.
That's right.
Yeah.
So we work well together, you know, and we have a couple of businesses that we run together, and she makes me better. She has the creative brain. I'm the German structured brain. So it works out really well.
So when did you first feel like a little spark, like, you know, from working with her, that you kind of went, looking forward to seeing her again?
You know, in the beginning, she was just super gracious to me, with me, because I was a rookie. Like, I had no idea what I was doing on Soul Food at first. And she was a thesp. She was a trained Shakespearean actress from New York who went to NYU. And she knew what she was doing. She had a great career. And she really helped me. Figure out what this was all about. So we became fast friends. She was in a relationship. I was in a relationship. So there was no confusion about what we were there to do. We were there to work. And then the second season is when it started getting a little more
heated.
I mean, obviously she's drop dead gorgeous.
Yes, she is.
But she's,
and so are you,
more beautiful inside.
I love that. So when did you know she was the one for you, Boris?
I went in her trailer sometime in the second season. I said, look, just so you know, one day we're going to be married with two kids.
And I went, oh my gosh, did you predict that?
I just did it. And she was mad at me for like 3 weeks because she thought I was playing with her and she didn't think it was funny. And it was crazy because in the second season, we went away for the summer. You know, we had a break and we were looking forward to get a break from each other because it got a little heated. And I went to New York to shoot Brown Sugar. And I said to her before we left, I said, look, maybe it's good that we get a little break from each other. I'm going to go to New York, shoot this movie. And she said, what movie? And I said, Brown Sugar. And she said, I just got an offer to do the same movie. I was like, oh, damn. So we ended up in New York together doing Brown Sugar with Tay and Sanaa and everybody else. So I guess it was destined that we were going to be together.
So how did you ask Nicole to marry you?
We were on a trip in Europe and I took her to my hometown and we went on a mountain right there by my hometown that I used to ski on. And I just plopped down on one knee in the middle of the summer in this huge meadow. And I popped the ring and she
romantic.
And she jumped up and ran down the hill.
Oh my God. Why does she always run from her when you give her a serious moment? She's like, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. Don't be doing that. Don't be playing with me.
You're so right.
Whoa.
One of her patterns. So she just ran. So I had to chase her down the damn mountain.
And you did.
I said, hey, you didn't answer me.
Oh my gosh. So I gotta talk about another funny moment too. You on a lip sync battle. Oh my God. Y'all competed against each other. That was classic, Boris. I loved it. But I just got to talk about them cornrows. Who put them cornrows on you, brother? Was that a joke or what was that?
It's just a joke. Yeah. It was terrible. But, you know, I had to pull out the big guns because I knew she was going to come for me. And so Sophie actually made the decision that I had to do the Meghan Trainor thing with the heels and the pink wig and everything.
Oh, and you did it. Now let's talk about Sophie, your daughter. She was diagnosed with spina bifida at birth. How is she doing now? Because I can remember when we did the play, you were always giving her massages. She was just such a hands-on and awesome dad.
Well, we wanted to give her a chance for the highest quality of life.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was born with spina bifida and she has no bladder function. So we had to catheterize her every 3 hours, night and day. And to this day, that's what we're doing. And obviously she does it herself now. She does everything.
Wow.
She's totally independent. She's super smart, speaks three languages.
Yes, Sophie. And is beautiful. How are you guys handling homeschooling during now?
You know, luckily, the kids have been with Dwight Global for a year now, which is an online program based on the school in New York City. And they do make their own schedule. They meet with their professors every day for like 2 hours. And then they do their assignments every week. And it's a school that prepares them for college.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches them time management and discipline and you know, with their schedule, with piano and art class, and Nicholas is like a superstar athlete. And
so, yes, Nicholas, which you'll find self too. They have beautiful children, y'all. I'm telling you. I mean, this family, when they come rolling through, it's like, watch out. Okay. So last two questions. You have a fashion company with your brother, Patrick, called mm-hmm. World of Alpha. I remember that back when we were doing the play. How's that doing?
We're doing good. You know, this is a new age with everything is online. So
yeah,
back then we did something that nobody else had done before. Now there's more and more people popping up with online custom made shops. But we had a leg up, so we're doing great. Coming up with new stuff all the time, and my brother's been a great partner of mine for as long as we've been alive, really. So
where can people find the World of Alpha?
Worldofalpha.com.
Okay.
Gymwrap.com, and then CoFit. CoFit.net as well. This is the fitness company that we started to help people.
So last question for you. How do you balance this all out now, being a father, doing a TV show? You film your TV show here in L.A.?
Yes, thank God.
Thank God. I know I filmed Empire Chicago. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I know what that's like, you know, going to the cold. It's like you're happy when you can be home and the family. Yep. So, you know, but how do you balance this all?
I prioritize. I don't balance. Balancing is hard when you have 20 balls in the air. You're always going to drop a few. So mm-hmm. when I prioritize, I only have two balls that I'm balancing, and then I put them down and I pick up two other balls, right? So
yeah,
family, obviously family's first. I make sure that they're healthy and taken care of. And that's where my happiness is. And then the rest comes after that. So, you know, we live in a crazy time right now. There's so much going on, and it's very important that you take care of your mental health and your spirit. And
absolutely.
So I have a daily routine, you know, from meditating and praying to working out, making sure that I eat healthy and that I have my space for myself. You know,
I just want to let you know that I participated in a couple of them 5-minute videos. So
there you go.
Thank you for that quick workout. Well, that leads us perfectly to today's hustle hack. Today's hustle hack is #BeTheHero. What ways can you change the life of a family member or a friend? We must care about our communities and our children. Mm-hmm. Always try to stay positive despite your circumstances. People need you. They need your help. Reach out and stay strong. Like my special guest today is the very handsome Boris Kojo, who I thank you so much, my friend, for doing my podcast today. Tell everybody, where can they find you on social media?
Boris Kojo.
On all platforms?
All platforms, Boris
Kojo. You're verified, got your blue check?
That's right.
Well, I thank you so much for doing Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. Please give the family my love. Tell them I said hello and happy holidays.
Much love to you. Thank you.
No doubt. Much. Okay, darlings, subscribe, download, and listen to Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. Until next time, darlings, bye for now. Mwah. The Hustling with Vivica A. Fox podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended as a replacement or substitution for any professional medical, financial, legal, or other advice, diagnosis, or treatment. This podcast does not constitute the practice of medicine or any other professional service. The use of any information provided during the podcast is at the listener's own risk. For medical or other advice appropriate to your specific situation, please consult a physician or other trained professional.